You're not. It is impossible for me to fade completely now. I am immortal on Wikipedia. I winced. I was now fully convinced of Nero's insanity. Wikipedia was always getting stuff wrong about me. He rolled his hand. Yes, yes, you think I am crazy. I could explain my plans and prove otherwise, but I have a lot on my plate today. I need you and Meg to open those gates. They've resisted my best efforts, but together you two can do it. Apollo, you have an affinity with oracles. Meg has a way with trees. Get to it, please and thank you. We would rather die, I said. Wouldn't we, Meg? No response. I glanced over. A silvery streak glistened on Meg's cheek. At first I thought one of her rhinestones had melted. Then I realized she was crying. Meg? Nero clasped his hands as if in prayer.
Oh, my. It seems we've had a slight miscommunication. You see, Apollo, Meg brought you here, just as I asked her to. Well done, my sweet.
Meg wiped her face.
I didn't mean...
My heart compressed to the size of a pebble. Meg, no. I can't believe... I reached for her. Peaches snarled and inserted himself between us. I realized the carpost was not here to protect us from Nero. He was defending Meg from me. Meg, I said, this man killed your father. He's a murderer. She stared at the ground. When she spoke, her voice was even more tortured than mine was when I sang in the anthill.
The beast killed my father. This is Nero. He's my stepfather.
I could not fully grasp this before Nero spread his arms.
That's right, my darling, he said. And you've done a wonderful job. Come to Papa.
Chapter 30. I school McCaffrey.
Yo, girl. Your stepdad is whack. Why won't she listen?
I had been betrayed before. The memories came flooding back to me in a painful tide. Once my former girlfriend, Cyrene, took up with Ares just to get back at me. Another time, Artemis shot me in the groin because I was flirting with her hunters. In 1928, Alexander Fleming failed to give me credit for inspiring his discovery of penicillin. I mean... Ouch! That stung.
But I couldn't remember ever being so wrong about someone as I had been about Meg. Well, at least not since Irving Berlin.
Alexander's ragtime band.
I remember telling him, you'll never make it big with a corny song like that.
Meg, we are friends.
My voice sounded petulant even to myself.
How could you do this to me?
Meg looked down at her red sneakers, the primary colored shoes of a traitor.
I tried to tell you, to warn you.
She has a good heart, Nero smiled. But Apollo, you and Meg have been friends for just a few days, and only because I asked Meg to befriend you. I have been Meg's stepfather, protector, and caretaker for years. She is a member of the Imperial Household.
I stared at my beloved dumpster waif. Yes, somehow over the past week she had become beloved to me. I could not imagine her as Imperial anything, definitely not as a part of Nero's entourage.
I risked my life for you, I said in amazement.
And that actually means something because I can die. Nero clapped politely.
We're all impressed, Apollo. Now, if you'd open the gates, they've defied me for too long.
I tried to glare at Meg, but my heart wasn't in it. I felt too hurt and vulnerable.
We gods do not like feeling vulnerable. Besides, Meg wasn't even looking at me. In a daze, I turned to the oak tree gates. I saw now that their fused trunks were marred from Nero's previous efforts. Chainsaw scars, burn marks, bites from axe blades, even some bullet holes. All these had barely chipped the outer bark. The most damaged area was an inch-deep impression in the shape of a human hand, where the wood had bubbled and peeled away. I glanced at the unconscious face of Pauly, the geyser god, strung up and bound with the five demigods.
Nero, what have you done?
Oh, a number of things. We found a way into this antechamber weeks ago. The labyrinth has a convenient opening in the Myrmica's nest. But getting through these gates...
You forced the Palakos to help you?
I had to restrain myself from throwing my wind chimes at the Emperor.
You used a nature spirit to destroy nature.
Meg, how can you tolerate this?
Peaches growled. For once, I had the feeling that the grain spirit might be in agreement with me. Meg's expression was as closed up as the gates. She stared intently at the bones littering the field.
Come now, Nero said. Meg knows there are good nature spirits and bad ones. This geyser god was annoying. He kept asking us to fill out surveys. Besides, he shouldn't have ventured so far from his source of power. He was quite easy to capture. His steam, as you can see, didn't do us much good anyway.
And the five demigods? I demanded. Did you use them too?
Of course. I didn't plan on luring them here, but every time we attacked the gates, the grove started wailing. I suppose it was calling for help, and the demigods couldn't resist. The first to wander in was this one. He pointed to Cecil Markowitz. The last two were your own children. Austin and Kayla, yes. They showed up after we forced Pauly to steam broil the trees. I guess the grove was quite nervous about that attempt. We got two demigods for the price of one.
I lost control.
I let out a guttural howl and charged the Emperor, intending to wring his hairy excuse for a neck. The Germani would have killed me before I ever got that far, but I was saved the indignity. I tripped over a human pelvis and belly surfed through the bones.
Apollo!
Meg ran toward me. I rolled over and kicked at her like a fussy child.
I don't need your help.
Don't you understand who your protector is? He's a monster. He's the Emperor who...
Don't say it, Nero warned. If you say who fiddled while Rome burned, I will have Vince and Gary flay you for a set of hide armor. You know as well as I do, Apollo, we didn't have fiddles back then, and I did not start the Great Fire of Rome.
I struggled to my feet.
But you profited from it.
Facing Nero, I remembered all the tawdry details of his rule, the extravagance and cruelty that had made him so embarrassing to me, his forefather. Nero was that relative you never wanted to invite to Lupercalia dinner.
Meg, I said, your stepfather watched as 70% of Rome was destroyed. Tens of thousands died.
I was 30 miles away in Antium, Nero snarled. I rushed back to the city and personally led the fire brigades.
Only when the fire threatened your palace.
Nero rolled his eyes.
I can't help it if I arrive just in time to save the most important building.
Meg cupped her hands over her ears.
Stop arguing, please.
I didn't stop. Talking seemed better than my other options, like helping Nero or dying.
After the Great Fire, I told her, instead of rebuilding the houses on Palatine Hill, Nero leveled the neighborhood and built a new palace, the Domus Aurea.
Nero got a dreamy look on his face.
Ah, yes. The House of Gold. It was beautiful, Meg. I had my own lake, 300 rooms, frescoes of gold, mosaics done in pearls and diamonds. I could finally live like a human being.
You had the nerve to put 100-foot-tall bronze statue in your front lawn, I said. A statue of yourself as Sol Apollo, the sun god. In other words, you claim to be me.
Indeed, Nero agreed. Even after I died, that statue lived on. I understand it became famous as the Colossus of Nero. They moved it to the Gladiators Amphitheater, and everyone began calling the theater after the statue, the Colosseum.
Nero puffed up his chest.
Yes, the statue was the perfect choice.
His tone sounded even more sinister than usual.
What are you talking about? I demanded.
Hmm? Oh, nothing.
He checked his watch. A mauve and gold Rolex.
The point is, I had style. The people loved me.
I shook my head. They turned against you. The people of Rome were sure you'd started the Great Fire, so you scapegoated the Christians. I was aware that this arguing was pointless. If Meg had hidden her true identity all this time, I doubted I could change her mind now. But perhaps I could stall long enough for the cavalry to arrive. If only I had a cavalry. Nero waved dismissively.
But the Christians were terrorists, you see. Perhaps they didn't start the fire, but they were causing all sorts of other trouble. I recognized that before anyone else.
He fed them to the lions, I told Meg. He burned them as human torches, the way he will burn these six. Meg's face turned green. She gazed at the unconscious prisoners on the stakes.
Nero, you wouldn't.
They will be released, Nero promised, as long as Apollo cooperates.
Meg, you can't trust him, I said. The last time he did this, he strung up Christians all over his backyard and burned them to illuminate his garden party.
I was there. I remember the screaming.
Meg clutched her stomach.
My dear, don't believe his stories, Nero said. That was just propaganda invented by my enemies.
Meg studied the face of Polly, the geyser god.
Nero, you didn't say anything about making them into torches.
They won't burn, he said, straining to soften his voice. It won't come to that. The beast will not have to act.
You see, Meg? I wagged a finger at the Emperor. It's never a good sign when someone starts referring to himself in the third person. Zeus used to scold me about that constantly. Vince and Gary stepped forward, their knuckles whitening on their spears.
I would be careful, Nero warned. My Germani are sensitive about insults to the imperial person. Now, as much as I love talking about myself, we are on a schedule.
He checked his watch again.
You'll open the gates. Then Meg will see if she can use the trees to interpret the future. If so, wonderful. If not, well, we'll burn that bridge when we come to it.
Meg, I said, he's a madman. At her feet, Peaches hissed protectively. Meg's chin quivered.
Nero cared about me, Apollo. He gave me a home. He taught me to fight.
You said he killed your father.
No!
She shook her head adamantly, a look of panic in her eyes.
No, that's not what I said. The beast killed him. But...
Nero snorted.
Oh, Apollo. You understand so little. Meg's father was weak.
She doesn't even remember him. He couldn't protect her. I raised her. I kept her alive.
My heart sank even further. I did not understand everything Meg had been through, or what she was feeling now, but I knew Nero. I saw how easily he could have twisted a scared child's understanding of the world. A little girl all alone, yearning for safety and acceptance after her father's murder. Even if that acceptance came from her father's killer. Meg, I am so sorry. Another tear traced her cheek.
She doesn't need sympathy.
Nero's voice turned as hard as bronze.
Now, my dear, if you would be so kind, open the gates. If Apollo objects, remind him that he is bound to follow your orders.
Meg swallowed. Apollo, don't make it harder. Please, help me open the gates. I shook my head. Not by choice. Then I command you. Help me. Now.
Chapter 31. Listen to the trees. The trees know what is up, yo. They know all the things. Meg's resolve may have been wavering, but Peaches's was not. When I hesitated to follow Meg's orders, the grain spirit bared his fangs and hissed,
Peaches!
As if that was a new torture technique.
Fine, I told Meg,
my voice turning bitter. The truth was, I had no choice. I could feel Meg's command sinking into my muscles, compelling me to obey. I faced the fused oaks and put my hands against their trunks. I felt no oracular power within. I heard no voices, just heavy, stubborn silence. The only message the trees seemed to be sending was, go away.
If we do this, I told Meg, Nero will destroy the grove.
He won't.
He has to. He can't control Dodona. Its power is too ancient. He can't let anyone else use it.
Meg placed her hands against the trees just below mine.
Concentrate. Open them. Please. You don't want to anger the beast.
She said this in a low voice. Again speaking as if the beast was someone I had not yet met. A boogeyman lurking under the bed. Not a man in a purple suit standing a few feet away. I could not refuse Meg's orders, but perhaps I should have protested more vigorously. Meg might have backed down if I called her bluff. But then Nero or Peaches or the Germani would have just killed me. I will confess to you, I was afraid of dying. Courageously, nobly, handsomely afraid. True. But afraid, nonetheless. I closed my eyes. I sensed the trees' implacable resistance, their mistrust of outsiders. I knew that if I forced open these gates, the grove would be destroyed. Yet I reached out with all my willpower and sought the voice of prophecy, drawing it to me. I thought of Rhea, Queen of the Titans, who had first planted this grove. Despite being a child of Gia and Uranos, despite being married to the cannibal King Kronos, Rhea had managed to cultivate wisdom and kindness. She had given birth to a new, better breed of immortals, if I do say so myself. She represented the best of the ancient times. True, she had withdrawn from the world and started a pottery studio in Woodstock, but she still cared about Dodona. She had sent me here to open the grove, to share its power. She was not the kind of goddess who believed in closed gates or no trespassing signs. I began to hum softly, "This land is your land." The bark grew warm under my fingertips. The tree roots trembled. I glanced at Meg. She was deep in concentration, leaning against the trunks as if trying to push them over. Everything about her was familiar. Her ratty pageboy hair, her glittering cat-eye glasses, her runny nose and chewed cuticles, and faint scent of apple pie. But she was someone I didn't know at all. Stepdaughter to the immortal, crazy Nero. A member of the imperial household. What did that even mean? I pictured the Brady Bunch in purple togas, lined up on the family staircase with Nero at the bottom in Alice's maid uniform. Having a vivid imagination is a terrible curse. Unfortunately for the Grove, Meg was also the daughter of Demeter. The trees responded to her power. The twin oaks rumbled. Their trunks began to move. I wanted to stop, but I was caught up in the momentum. The Grove seemed to be drawing on my power now. My hands stuck to the trees. The gates opened wider, forcibly spreading my arms. For a terrifying moment, I thought the trees might keep moving and rip me limb from limb. Then they stopped. The roots settled. The bark cooled and released me. I stumbled back, exhausted. Meg remained, transfixed, in the newly opened gateway. On the other side were, well, more trees. Despite the winter cold, the young oaks rose tall and green, growing in concentric circles around a slightly larger specimen in the center. Littering the ground were acorns, glowing with a faint amber light. Around the Grove stood a protective wall of trees even more formidable than the ones in the antechamber. Above, another tightly woven dome of branches guarded the place from aerial intruders. Before I could warn her, Meg stepped across the threshold. The voices exploded. Imagine 40 nail guns firing into your brain from all directions at once. The words were babble, but they tore at my sanity, demanding my attention. I covered my ears. The noise just got louder and more persistent. Peaches clawed frantically at the dirt, trying to bury his head. Vince and Gary writhed on the ground. Even the unconscious demigods thrashed and moaned on their stakes. Nero reeled, his hand raised as if to block an intense light. "Meg! Control the voices! Do it now!" Meg didn't appear hurt by the noise, but she looked bewildered.
"They're saying something."
She swept her hands through the air, pulling at invisible threads to untangle the pandemonium.
"They're agitated. I can't... Wait."
Suddenly the voices shut off, as if they'd made their point. Meg turned toward Nero, her eyes wide.
"It's true. The trees told me you mean to burn them."
The Germani groaned, half-conscious on the ground. Nero recovered more quickly. He raised a finger, admonishing, guiding.
"Listen to me, Meg. I'd hoped the Grove could be useful, but obviously it is fractured and confused. You can't believe what it says. It's the mouthpiece of a senile Titan queen. The Grove must be raised. It's the only way, Meg. You understand that, don't you?"
He kicked Gary over onto his back and rifled through the bodyguard's pouches. Then Nero stood, triumphantly holding a box of matches.
"After the fire, we'll rebuild," he said. "It will be glorious."
Meg stared at him as if noticing his horrendous neckbeard for the first time.
What are you talking about?"
"He's going to burn and level Long Island," I said. "Then he'll make it his private domain, just like he did with Rome." Nero laughed in exasperation.
"Long Island is a mess anyway. No one will miss it. My new imperial complex will extend from Manhattan to Montauk, the greatest palace ever built. We'll have private rivers and lakes, 100 miles of beachfront property, gardens big enough for their own zip codes. I'll build each member of my household a private skyscraper. Oh, Meg, imagine the parties we will have in our new Domus Aurea.
The truth was a heavy thing. Meg's knees buckled under its weight.
You can't.
Her voice shook.
The woods. I'm the daughter of Demeter.
You're my daughter, Nero corrected.
And I care for you deeply.
Which is why you need to move aside. Quickly.
He set a match to the striking surface of the box.
As soon as I light these stakes, our human torches will send a wave of fire straight through that gateway. Nothing will be able to stop it. The entire forest will burn.
Please, Meg cried.
Come along, dearest.
Nero's frown hardened.
Apollo is of no use to us anymore. You don't want to wake the beast, do you?
He lit his match and stepped toward the nearest stake, where my son Austin was bound. Chapter 32. It takes a village, people, to protect your mind.
YMCA. Yeah.
Oh, this part is difficult to tell. I am a natural storyteller. I have an infallible instinct for drama. I want to relate what should have happened. How I leaped forward shouting, "No!" and spun like an acrobat, knocking aside the lit match, then twisted in a series of blazing fast Shaolin moves, cracking Nero's head and taking out his bodyguards before they could recover. Ah, yes. That would have been perfect. Alas, the truth constrains me. Curse you, truth. In fact, I spluttered something like, "Nuh-uh, dundoot." I may have waved my Brazilian handkerchief with the hope that its magic would destroy my enemies. The real hero was Peaches. The Carpos must have sensed Meg's true feelings, or perhaps he just didn't like the idea of burning forests. He hurtled through the air, screaming his war cry. You guessed it.
Peaches!
He landed on Nero's arm, chomped the lit match from the Emperor's hand, then landed a few feet away, wiping his tongue and crying,
Hat! Hat!
Which I assumed meant hot in the dialect of deciduous fruit. The scene might have been funny, except that the Germani were now back on their feet. Five demigods and a geyser spirit were still tied to highly flammable posts, and Nero still had a box of matches. The Emperor stared at his empty hand.
Meg?
His voice was as cold as an icicle.
What is the meaning of this?
Peaches, come here!
Meg's voice had turned brittle with fear. The Carpos bounded to her side. He hissed at me, Nero, and the Germani. Meg took a shaky breath, clearly gathering her nerve.
Nero, Peaches is right. You can't burn these people alive.
Nero sighed. He looked at his bodyguards for moral support, but the Germani still appeared woozy. They were hitting the sides of their heads as if trying to clear water from their ears.
Meg, said the Emperor, I am trying so hard to keep the beast at bay. Why won't you help me? I know you are a good girl. I wouldn't have allowed you to roam around Manhattan so much on your own, playing the street waif, if I didn't know you could take care of yourself. But softness toward your enemies is not a virtue. You are my stepdaughter. Any of these demigods would kill you without hesitation given the chance.
Meg, that's not true, I said. You've seen what Camp Half-Blood is like.
She studied me uneasily.
Even if it was true,
she turned to Nero.
You told me never to lower myself to my enemy's level.
No, indeed.
Nero's tone had frayed like a weathered rope.
We are better. We are stronger. We will build a glorious new world. But these nonsense-spewing trees stand in our way, Meg. Like any invasive weeds, they must be burned. And the only way to do that is with a true conflagration. Flames stoked by blood. Let us do this together, and not involve the beast, shall we?
Finally, in my mind, something clicked. I remembered how my father used to punish me centuries ago, when I was a young god learning the ways of Olympus. Zeus used to say, "Don't get on the wrong side of my lightning bolts, boy." As if the lightning bolt had a mind of its own. As if Zeus had nothing to do with the punishments he meted out upon me.
"Don't blame me,"
his tone implied. "It's the lightning bolt that seared every molecule in your body." Many years later, when I killed the Cyclopes who made Zeus's lightning, it was no rash decision. I'd always hated those lightning bolts. It was easier than hating my father. Nero took the same tone when he referred to himself as the Beast. He spoke of his anger and cruelty as if they were forces outside his control. If he flew into a rage, well then, he would hold Meg responsible. The realization sickened me. Meg had been trained to regard her kindly stepfather Nero and the terrifying beast as two separate people. I understood now why she preferred to spend her time in the alleys of New York. I understood why she had such quick mood changes, going from cartwheels to full shutdown in a matter of seconds. She never knew what might unleash the beast. She fixed her eyes on me. Her lips quivered. I could tell she wanted a way out, some eloquent argument that would mollify her stepfather and allow her to follow her conscience. But I was no longer a silver-tongued god. I could not out-talk an orator like Nero, and I would not play the beast's blame game. Instead, I took a page from Meg's book, which was always short and to the point. "He's evil," I said. "You're good. You must make your own choice." I could tell that this was not the news Meg wanted. Her mouth tightened. She drew back her shoulder blades as if preparing for a measles shot, something painful but necessary. She placed her hand on the Carpos's curly scalp.
"Peaches?"
she said in a small but firm voice.
"Get the matchbox."
The Carpos sprang into action. Nero barely had time to blink before Peaches ripped the box from his hand and jumped back to Meg's side. The Germani readied their spears. Nero raised his hand for restraint. He gave Meg a look that might have been heartbreak, if he had possessed a heart.
"I see you weren't ready for this assignment, my dear," he said. "It's my fault. Vince, Gary, detain Meg, but don't hurt her. When we get home..."
He shrugged, his expression full of regret. "As for Apollo and the little fruit demon, they will have to burn."
"No!"
Meg croaked. Then, at full volume, she shouted,
"No!"
And the Grove of Dodona shouted with her. The blast was so powerful it knocked Nero and his guards off their feet. Peaches screamed and beat his head against the dirt. This time, however, I was more prepared. As the tree's ear-splitting chorus reached its crescendo, I anchored my mind with the catchiest tune I could imagine. I hummed YMCA, which I used to perform with the village people in my construction worker costume, until the Indian chief and I got in a fight over... Never mind. That's not important.
"Meg!"
I pulled the brass wind chimes from my pocket and tossed them to her.
"Put these on the center tree. YMCA. Focus the growth energy. YMCA.
I wasn't sure she could hear me. She raised the chimes and watched as they swayed and clanked, turning the noise from the trees into snatches of coherent speech. Happiness approaches. The fall of the sun. The final verse. Would you like to hear our specials today? Meg's face went slack with surprise. She turned toward the grove and sprinted through the gateway. Peaches crawled after her, shaking his head. I wanted to follow, but I couldn't leave Nero and his guards alone with 6 hostages. Still humming YMCA, I marched toward them. The trees screamed louder than ever, but Nero rose to his knees. He pulled something from his coat pocket, a vial of liquid, and splashed it on the ground in front of him. I doubted that was a good thing, but I had more immediate concerns. Vince and Gary were getting up. Vince thrust his spear in my direction. I was angry enough to be reckless. I grabbed the point of his weapon and yanked the spear up, smacking Vince under his chin. He fell stunned, and I grabbed fistfuls of his hide armor. He was easily twice my size. I didn't care. I lifted him off his feet. My arms sizzled with power. I felt invincibly strong, the way a god should feel. I had no idea why my strength had returned, but I decided this was not the moment to question my good luck. I spun Vince like a discus, tossing him skyward with such force that he punched a Germanus-shaped hole in the tree canopy and sailed out of sight. Kudos to the Imperial Guard for having stupid amounts of courage. Despite my show of force, Gary charged me. With one hand, I snapped his spear. With the other, I punched a fist straight through his shield and hit his chest with enough might to fell a rhinoceros. He collapsed in a heap. I faced Nero. I could already feel my strength ebbing. My muscles were returning to their pathetic mortal flabbiness. I just hoped I'd have enough time to rip off Nero's head and stuff it down his mauve suit. The Emperor snarled.
You're a fool, Apollo. You always focus on the wrong thing.
He glanced at his Rolex.
My wrecking crew will be here any minute. Once Camp Half-Blood is destroyed, I'll make it my new front lawn. Meanwhile, you'll be here, putting out fires.
From his vest pocket, he produced a silver cigarette lighter. Typical of Nero to keep several forms of fire-making close at hand. I looked at the glistening streaks of oil he had splashed on the ground. Greek fire, of course.
Don't,
I said. Nero grinned.
Goodbye, Apollo. Only 11 more Olympians to go.
He dropped the lighter. I did not have the pleasure of tearing Nero's head off. Could I have stopped him from fleeing? Possibly. But the flames were roaring between us, burning grass and bones, tree roots and the earth itself. The blaze was too strong to stamp out, if Greek fire even could be stamped out, and it was rolling hungrily toward the 6 bound hostages. I let Nero go. Somehow he hauled Gary to his feet, and lugged the punch-drunk Germanus toward the ant's nest. Meanwhile, I ran to the stakes. The closest was Austin's. I wrapped my arms around the base and pulled, completely disregarding proper heavy lifting techniques. My muscles strained. My eyes swam with the effort. I managed to raise the stake enough to topple it backward. Austin stirred and groaned. I dragged him, cocoon and all, to the other side of the clearing, as far from the fire as possible. I would have brought him into the grove of Dodona, but I had a feeling I wouldn't be doing him any favors by putting him in a dead-end clearing full of insane voices in the direct path of approaching flames. I ran back to the stakes. I repeated the process, uprooting Kayla, then Polly the Geyser God, then the others. By the time I pulled Miranda Gardner to safety, the fire was a raging red tidal wave, only inches from the gates of the grove. My divine strength was gone. Meg and Peaches were nowhere to be seen. I had bought a few minutes for the hostages, but the fire would eventually consume us all. I fell to my knees and sobbed. Help! I scanned the dark trees, tangled and foreboding. I did not expect any help. I was not even used to asking for help. I was Apollo. Mortals called to me. Yes, occasionally I might have ordered demigods to run trivial errands for me, like starting wars or retrieving magic items from monsters' lairs. But those requests didn't count. I can't do this alone. I imagined Daphne's face floating beneath the trunk of one tree, then another. Soon the woods would burn. I couldn't save them any more than I could save Meg, or the lost demigods, or myself. I'm so sorry. Please, forgive me. My head must have been spinning from smoke inhalation. I began to hallucinate. The shimmering forms of dryads emerged from their trees. A legion of Daphnes in green gossamer dresses. Their expressions were melancholy, as if they knew they were going to their deaths. Yet they circled the fire. They raised their arms, and the earth erupted at their feet. A torrent of mud churned over the flames. The dryads drew the fire's heat into their bodies. Their skin charred black. Their faces hardened and cracked. As soon as the last flames were snuffed out, the dryads crumbled to ash. I wished I could crumble with them. I wanted to cry. But the fire had seared all the moisture from my tear ducts. I had not asked for so many sacrifices. I had not expected it. I felt hollow, guilty, and ashamed. Then it occurred to me how many times I had asked for sacrifices, how many heroes I had sent to their deaths. Had they been any less noble and courageous than these dryads? Yet I had felt no remorse when I sent them off on deadly tasks. I had used them and discarded them, laid waste to their lives to build my own glory. I was no less of a monster than Nero. Wind blew through the clearing, an unseasonably warm gust that swirled up the ashes and carried them through the forest canopy into the sky. Only after the breeze calmed did I realize it must have been the west wind, my old rival, offering me consolation. He had swept up the remains and taken them off to their next beautiful reincarnation. After all these centuries, Zephyros had accepted my apology. I discovered I had some tears left after all. Behind me, someone groaned.
Where am I?
Austin was awake. I crawled to his side, now weeping with relief, and kissed his face. My beautiful son. He blinked at me in confusion. His cornrows were sprinkled with ashes like frost on a field. I suppose it took a moment for him to process why he was being fawned over by a grungy, half-deranged boy with acne.
Ah, right. Apollo.
He tried to move.
What the? Why am I wrapped in smelly bandages? Could you free me, maybe?
I laughed hysterically, which I doubt helped Austin's peace of mind. I clawed at his bindings, but made no progress. Then I remembered Gary's snapped spear. I retrieved the point and spent several minutes sawing Austin free. Once pulled from the stake, he stumbled around, trying to shake the circulation back into his limbs. He took in the scene. The smoldering forest, the other prisoners. The grove of Dodona had stopped its wild chorus of screaming. When had that happened? A radiant amber light now glowed from the gateway.
What's going on?
Austin asked.
Also, Where is my saxophone?
Sensible questions. I wished I had sensible answers. All I knew was that Meg McCaffrey was still wandering in the grove, and I did not like the fact that the trees had gone silent. I stared at my weak mortal arms. I wondered why I'd experienced a sudden surge of divine strength when facing the Germani. Had my emotions triggered it? Was it the first sign of my godly vigor returning for good? Or perhaps Zeus was just messing with me again, giving me a taste of my old power before yanking it away once more.
Remember this, kid? Well, you can't have it.
I wished I could summon that strength again, but I would have to make do. I handed Austin the broken spear.
Free the others. I'll be back.
Austin stared at me incredulously.
You're going in there? Is it safe?
I doubt it, I said. Then I ran toward the Oracle. Chapter 33. Parting is sorrow. Nothing about it is sweet. Don't step on my face. The trees were using their inside voices. As I stepped through the gateway, I realized they were still talking in conversational tones, babbling nonsensically like sleepwalkers at a cocktail party. I scanned the grove. No sign of Meg. I called her name. The trees responded by raising their voices, driving me cross-eyed with dizziness. I steadied myself on the nearest oak.
"Watch it, man," the tree said.
I lurched forward, the trees trading bits of verse as if playing a game of rhymes.
Caves of bloom, strike the hue, westward burning, pages turning. Indiana, ripe banana, happiness approaches, serpents and roaches.
None of it made sense, but each line carried the weight of prophecy. I felt as if dozens of important statements, each vital to my survival, were being blended together, loaded in a shotgun and fired at my face. Oh, that's a rather good image. I'll have to use it in a haiku.
Meg!
I called again. Still no reply. The grove did not seem so large. How could she not hear me? How could I not see her? I slogged along, humming a perfect A 440 hertz tone to keep myself focused. When I reached the second ring of trees, the oaks became more conversational.
"Hey, buddy, got a quarter?" one asked.
Another tried to tell me a joke about a penguin and a nun walking into a Shake Shack. A third oak was giving its neighbor an infomercial sales pitch about a food processor.
"And you won't believe what it does with pasta."
"Wow," said the other tree. "It makes pasta, too?"
"Fresh linguine in minutes," the sales oak enthused.
I did not understand why an oak tree would want linguine, but I kept moving. I was afraid that if I listened too long, I would order the food processor for 3 easy installments of $39.99, and my sanity would be lost forever. Finally, I reached the center of the grove. On the far side of the largest oak tree, Meg stood with her back to the trunk, her eyes closed tight. The wind chimes were still in her hand, but they hung forgotten at her side. The brass cylinders clanked, muted against her dress. At her feet, peaches rocked back and forth, giggling.
"Apples? Peaches. Mangoes? Peaches!"
"Meg," I touched her shoulder. She flinched. She focused on me as if I were a clever optical illusion. Her eyes simmered with fear.
"It's too much," she said. "Too much."
The voices had her in their grip. It was bad enough for me to endure, like 100 radio stations playing at once, forcibly splitting my brain into different channels. But I was used to prophecies. Meg, on the other hand, was a daughter of Demeter. The trees liked her. They were all trying to share with her, to get her attention at the same time. Soon they would permanently fracture her mind.
"The wind chimes," I said. "Hang them in the tree."
I pointed to the lowest branch, well above our heads. Alone, neither of us could reach it. But if I gave Meg a boost... Meg backed away, shaking her head. The voices of Dodono were so chaotic, I wasn't sure she had heard me. If she had, she either didn't understand or didn't trust me. I had to tamp down my feelings of betrayal. Meg was Nero's stepdaughter. She had been sent to lure me here, and our whole friendship was a lie. She had no right to mistrust me. But I could not stay bitter. If I blamed her for the way Nero had twisted her emotions, I was no better than the beast. Also, just because she had lied about being my friend did not mean I wasn't hers. She was in danger. I was not going to leave her to the madness of the Grove's penguin jokes. I crouched and laced my fingers to make a foothold.
"Please."
To my left, Peaches rolled onto his back and wailed.
"Linguini? Peaches!"
Meg grimaced. I could see from her eyes that she was deciding to cooperate with me. Not because she trusted me, but because Peaches was suffering. Just when I thought my feelings could not be hurt any worse. It was one thing to be betrayed. It was another thing to be considered less important than a diapered fruit spirit. Nevertheless, I remained steady as Meg placed her left foot in my hands. With all my remaining strength, I hoisted her up. She stepped onto my shoulders, then planted one red sneaker on top of my head. I made a mental note to put a safety label on my scalp. Warning: top step is not for standing. With my back against the oak, I could feel the voices of the Grove coursing up its trunk and drumming through its bark. The central tree seemed to be one giant antenna for crazy talk. My knees were about to buckle. Meg's treads were grinding into my forehead. The A440 I had been humming rapidly deflated to a G-sharp. Finally, Meg tied the wind chimes to the branch. She jumped down as my legs collapsed, and we both ended up sprawled in the dirt. The brass chimes swayed and clanged, picking notes out of the wind and making chords from the dissonance. The Grove hushed, as if the trees were listening and thinking, "Ooh, pretty." Then the ground trembled. The central oak shook with such energy it rained acorns. Meg got to her feet. She approached the tree and touched its trunk.
"Speak,"
she commanded. A single voice boomed forth from the wind chimes, like a cheerleader screaming through a megaphone.
"There once was a god named Apollo, who plunged in a cave blue and hollow. Upon a three-seater, the bronze fire-eater was forced death and madness to swallow."
The wind chimes stilled. The Grove settled into tranquility, as if satisfied with the death sentence it had given me. Oh, the horror. A sonnet I could have handled. A quatrain would have been cause for celebration. But only the deadliest prophecies are couched in the form of a limerick. I stared at the wind chimes, hoping they would speak again and correct themselves.
"Oops, our mistake. That prophecy was for a different Apollo."
But my luck was not that good. I had been handed an edict worse than 1,000 advertisements for pasta makers. Peaches rose. He shook his head and hissed at the oak tree, which expressed my own sentiments perfectly. He hugged Meg's calf, as if she were the only thing keeping him from falling off the world. The scene was almost sweet, except for the carpus's fangs and glowing eyes. Meg regarded me warily. The lenses of her glasses were spider-webbed with cracks.
"That prophecy," she said. Did you understand it?
I swallowed a mouthful of soot. Perhaps some of it. We'll need to talk to Rachel.
There's no more we.
Meg's tone was as acrid as the volcanic gas of Delphi.
Do what you need to do. That's my final order.
This hit me like a spear shaft to the chin, despite the fact that she had lied to me and betrayed me.
Meg, you can't.
I couldn't keep the shakiness out of my voice.
You claimed my service. Until my trials are over, I release you.
No! I could not stand the idea of being abandoned. Not again. Not by this ragamuffin dumpster queen, whom I'd learned to care about so much.
You can't possibly believe in Nero now. You heard him explain his plans. He means to level this entire island. You saw what he tried to do to his hostages.
He wouldn't have let them burn. He promised. He held back. You saw it. That wasn't the beast.
My ribcage felt like an over-tightened harp.
Meg, Nero is the beast. He killed your father.
No! Nero is my stepfather. My dad. My dad unleashed the beast. He made it angry.
Meg.
Stop!
She covered her ears.
You don't know him. Nero is good to me. I can talk to him. I can make it okay.
Her denial was so complete, so irrational, I realized there was no way I could argue with her. She reminded me painfully of myself when I fell to Earth. How I had refused to accept my new reality. Without Meg's help, I would have gotten myself killed. Now our roles were reversed. I edged toward her, but Peaches's snarl stopped me in my tracks. Meg backed away.
We're done.
We can't be, I said. We're bound, whether you like it or not. It occurred to me that she'd said the exact same thing to me only a few days before. She gave me one last look through her cracked lenses. I would have given anything for her to blow a raspberry. I wanted to walk the streets of Manhattan with her doing cartwheels in the intersections. I missed hobbling with her through the labyrinth, our legs tied together. I would have settled for a good garbage fight in an alley. Instead, she turned and fled, with Peaches at her heels. It seemed to me that they dissolved into the trees, just the way Daphne had done long ago. Above my head, a breeze made the wind chimes jingle. This time, no voices came from the trees. I didn't know how long Dodona would remain silent, but I didn't want to be here if the Oaks decided to start telling jokes again. I turned and saw something strange at my feet. An arrow with an oak shaft and green fletching. There shouldn't have been an arrow. I hadn't brought any into the grove. But in my dazed state, I didn't question this. I did what any archer would do. I retrieved it and returned it to my quiver.
Chapter 34. Uber's got nothing. Lyft is weak. And taxis? Nah. My ride is to Mom.
Austin had freed the other prisoners. They looked like they had been dipped in a vat of glue and cotton swabs, but otherwise they seemed remarkably undamaged. Ellis Wakefield staggered around with his fists clenched, looking for something to punch. Cecil Markowitz, son of Hermes, sat on the ground trying to clean his sneakers with a deer's thigh bone. Austin, resourceful boy, had produced a canteen of water and was washing the Greek fire off of Kayla's face. Miranda Gardner, the head counselor of Demeter, knelt by the place where the dryads had sacrificed themselves. She wept silently. Polly the Palakos floated toward me. Like his partner Pete, his lower half was all steam,
From the waist up, he looked like a slimmer, more